Tommy Green Front's holy name. Tommy, it's an honor to have you here on The Antidote.
Thanks so much, man. Appreciate being here.
Well, you know something? It was 7 years ago when you came for a talk with me about I Am, the final album by Sleeping Giant. Now, you got to tell me, do you ever miss those days with that band?
Yeah, absolutely, man. It was an incredible kind of experience. It was sort of like it was the coolest thing that I'd ever had a chance to be a part of. And we had just incredible experiences. In a lot of ways, it was like going from being just like a regular hardcore kid from Salt Lake and, you know, 40 to 60 kids at a show is like what was normal. And then moving to California and then watching sort of the California crowds. And then what happened with Sleeping Giant to become like where we got to tour and like we played all over the place and people came to see us. Like, yeah, it was bananas. It meant a lot to me. And there's quite a few times where I'm like, man, that was a cool experience. Or I'll have a message from someone that's like, you know, this part of what you guys did really impacted me. And that's always so like humbling. And I always appreciate that stuff. So I miss that from time to time, for sure.
Well, I guess you must have kept that music itch because it only took you a couple of years to start something new. Holy Name is different, but it's similar at the same time to Sleeping Giant. You know, it's still hardcore worship, but this time you're making music with just you and Joe Holt instead of a full band. So how does it work having only two members during the creation process?
Well, that's actually kind of the easiest part in a lot of ways. Like Joe, he lives in a small town in Minnesota with his wife and his daughters. And he just is used to doing stuff kind of by himself. And he's one of those like wonder kids that can just kind of do everything and is used to creating projects kind of at will. And so the inception of Holy Name was like during the COVID lockdown season, a bunch of our friends from all over the country usually come to Salt Lake like once a year to do, it was do like a different ministry. Everyone would just get together because everyone was sort of siloed and no one could hang out. We just said, hey, like record wherever you are. And let's just make that like a COVID mixtape of all of our respective friendship groups and ministries kind of all over. And for my sort of offering of it, I called Joe because I knew Joe could kind of do all of it and just said, hey, would you be interested in doing, you know, some remakes of some of my songs and some other songs? And that's how kind of it started. But Joe and I work really well together in that way. And he's just incredible. Without Joe, Holy Name doesn't have that heaviness and some of that sound. And it's a very cool partnership in terms of like writing and creating. And then when we get to play, my friend Shayton that lives out here in Salt Lake with me, and then Rookie, Matt, who is the drummer of Sleeping Giant, you know, they perform with us, but creating the songs in a lot of ways, you know, it's not meant to like keep the other dudes out or anything like that. But Joey and I just write really good together. So that's kind of what we do.
Do you ever intimidate Joe? You look in photos to be twice the size of him.
Nah, he's much stronger than I am. So even though he's shorter in stature, he is mightier in the ability to lift weights and be tough. So no, I don't think so. I mean, we've known each other and we've been doing ministry together probably since 2012. And so I met him and his girlfriend at that point, who's now his wife, at a festival in Minnesota on a Sleeping Giant tour years and years ago. And so then he kind of became part of our like broader faith community and was just like a friend for a long time. And so, yeah, I mean, I'm older than him and, you know, I'm sure there were different seasons where maybe he looked to me in maybe different kind of influences, but for the most part, it's like, he's really come into his own and he's probably just intimidated by how loud and irritating I am with all my creative ideas. I don't think he's that intimidated with me.
I'd like you and I to go back to 2021 for the very first Holy Name single, Fall on Your Knees. Yeah. And something that stands out is that I've heard the original song on Aaron Craner's SoundCloud page.
Yes.
And it was a stripped down acoustic track, but then you dialed it up by making it hardcore.
Yeah.
You got to tell me, honestly, how did Aaron feel about that?
Oh man. Well, Aaron is actually my brother-in-law. He's one of my best friends and we've been hanging out since we were both 18, 19 years old. And he's one of the most important people in my whole life. And so it was probably 20, 14 or 15. Anyways, he had just moved back to Utah from California after going through a lot of really painful, like, life changes. And we were at a men's Bible study, and he said he had a song. Now, what you heard in that kind of acoustic led, he's one of my favorite, like, singer-songwriters that I know. And he's just incredible. And his sort of praise and worship songs, I adore everything that he does. And so he started playing this new song. And the first half of it, you know, it's different phrasing. It's a different thing. And then it gets to the second half. And he started singing, you know, "Lead me onward." And I remember hearing it. And I set my phone on record and put it on a chair. And then when he hit the chorus of that line, "Fall on your knees," I just was like, what? So at the end of that Bible study, I remember grabbing him. I was still in Sleeping Giant at the time. And I said, "I'm going to take that song and I'm going to put it on a Sleeping Giant record. And I'm going to do everything I can to put it in front of the whole world, because I think the whole world needs to hear that song." And he's very humble and does not like seek attention or like approval and any of that. And he was just like, "Yeah, what, you know, like whatever." Well, we ran out of time with Sleeping Giant, so I couldn't get it put together. And I really wanted to do a solid for him because he's so important to me. And I wanted him to know that I meant what I said. Then, you know, years later, it's like, there's a song that I could make kind of heavy and beautiful. The way that I heard it in my head was it needed to be big enough that it could sound like thousands of people could sing it, or like in my mind, I was like, I will just make this the biggest thing I possibly can. What would I do with this beautiful thing that my friend has created and given to the world? And so when I played it for him, we both just sat in my car together and just like wept. He could hear what I did with it, which is different than what he would do. You know, I think it really did mean something to him. But ultimately, you know, Dave, it's like, it's the thing that he went through. It's his story. And I just get to kind of be a witness to that. And it's the thing that's on his life. And so I think maybe that combined sort of the crushing that we both have experienced at different points, putting that to music and then being able to release that, I think that's one of the reasons why that song is so powerful. What I hear from people is that that song makes an impact. And that to me is, it's 90% Aaron Craner and 10% Tommy. There you go.
You spoke about it being big. It wasn't big. The song was enormous, 8.5 minutes long. Yeah. You didn't want to make it shorter.
No, and we got told to. I remember going through the recording process and they're like, "Dude, I would cut this thing in half. I would," and I was like, "I am doing the song the way that I've heard the song in my head." But we were cautioned. Like, we really were like in the process, like, "Dude, this is an 8-minute song," like blah, blah. And I'm like, "Yeah." And it's going to give people time to like actually maybe get somewhere emotionally. And what I used to say back in the day before, you know, going through some changes with, I was like, I think it's important that you play the song so that you can feel it. And then you play that song until you're pretty sure that God was there and that God felt it too. And so in my mind, it's like, you got to give people time. I was kind of like, good, I'll make it 16 minutes long. I don't care. You know, like whatever.
Well, it's important enough that we're including it on tonight's show.
Oh, awesome. I love that you're doing that. Thank you.
We got to talk about the music style of Holy Name, because, you know, it's hard to label. Tonight I've been calling it hardcore, but the band has been calling it preachcore.
Yeah.
But what I do find hilarious is that on Holy Name's press material, you've described it as holy drone violent worship. Like, what was that all about?
Well, it's like the idea for me, I've had in my head since probably 2008, some of the most interesting music that really made an impact on me. It was heavier music, but when there's very distinct melody and there's beauty in it, that was the stuff that I was always drawn to. When there's heavy guitars and drums and stuff, like one of my favorite bands that I remember just really appreciating in the early kind of 90s was Helmet. And I love that Page would yell. There was heavy songs and stuff, but I love that he would sing. And it was like driving music, but it was like he was singing over it. And, you know, there was even like this thing of like, when you listen to Dead Kennedys, like it's a punk rock record, but there's these guitar leads and there's these beautiful kind of like guitar melodies that come out. Like, that stuff is the stuff that really made an impact on me. And so the combining of these kind of opposites is some of the stuff that I really appreciate. Anyways, we all like pretty stuff. We all like ugly stuff. It's like, that's kind of where we live. So when we started this, it was like, I just wanted to try to process through and sing beautiful songs over really heavy stuff. And Joe just wanted to like kick walls. Like, he just wanted to write the heaviest stuff possible. So combining those two to just sort of like do what was important in different ways for both of us. It's like, we wanted people to feel like if they needed to hear something beautiful, which ultimately is so transformative, like you're hurting or you're struggling, beauty can heal. And so it's like, there needs to be this element of beauty in it, but it's also us and from where we came from and what we brought to this was like, I just knew that I wasn't trying to make like soft music. I wanted the music to be heavy, but I wanted the vocals to be kind of beautiful, like that sort of dichotomy.
Now you've made me really curious about something.
Okay.
Do you think there could ever be any limits to the music styles that could be used in worship?
No. But I would say that it depends on who you're worshiping and it depends on how you're worshiping and where that's coming from. I think there's so much diversity. Like in Psalms, it says the heavens declare the glory of God. You know, gas is burning millions of miles away. They pour forth speech without talking. So like, no, man, there's not in Psalm, I think 65, one of those guys, I don't remember the address. It says that to you, O Lord, you know, even silence is praise. So like, No, I don't think that there's a limit outside of man's own ego and pride. Whatever actually makes it about us and not about God, that's the limit. But I think if you're a little kid and you just have joy in your heart in the presence of the Lord and you bang your hands together, he loves it, right? I think it's about ultimately the person that's going to define what praise and what worship is ultimately is God. I would call this, you know, praise for sure. Mm-hmm. I would call this praise. And violent worship is, you know, it's that thing of like we're surrendered to Christ and we're trying really desperately to create a sound that feels like authentic and real for where we are and what we're experiencing. I hope it lands for other people, but this was first and foremost, this was about, for me, realizing something that was important to me. And so I'm grateful if other people can get there, but my opinion of what worship has been transformed over the last 5 or 6 years. But knowing what I think I can guess about God is like, man, God works in so many different ways that like, I have no idea, man. There's cultures and instruments and sounds. What do you do when your church doesn't have electricity? You know, the human voice. You can come up with any number of ways to try to worship God, but I'll let God decide what was actually worship.
Well, not all holy name songs are worshipful. Mr. Millstone delivers a warning.
Yeah. I mean, if I could be honest, like, Mr. Millstone was, you know, the whole record in a lot of ways was processing loss and death of dreams, death of real people in my life, the death of people that were so close to me and the loss and grief of like real death. And then in turn, kind of the beginnings of walking away from expressions of my Christian faith that I no longer could kind of believe in. And one of the things that set that in motion, one of the final kind of like straws that broke the camel's back, let's say, was being a part of a community where there was a man that was, you know, a very gifted teacher and a very smart individual that turned out to be a complete and total sociopath and a covert narcissist and was grooming women on his staff and was deeply gifted and could hide in the supernatural gifting that God had for him or whatever. And it was demonic and it was really, really wicked and evil. And so the story that Jesus tells in the Gospels is, you know, you need to be careful not to cause any of these little ones to stumble. Anyone that manipulates and uses or hurts my children, it would be better for them to be dropped into the sea with a rock around their neck.
Mm-hmm.
It's a horrible judgment that the Lord issued. For me, it was like, taking that scripture and sort of turning it into a song. I was trying to sum up that experience, which is basically that, like, the church that I was a part of was more interested in seeing the preacher restored to ministry than they were at the actual justice for the women that had been assaulted, the people that lied to and manipulated. It was like the church just needed business as usual to keep happening. And they're so bankrupt inside in some way that they would rather have a good teacher and a name on the platform or someone popular or butts in the seats or whatever it is. They would sacrifice the truth of righteous judgment, like real justice. They'll sell justice out if it gets them a good show. Just don't get no blood on the platform. And that's what I was trying to say. It was like the wounded get ushered out, but the predator gets to stay.
And you went through a major change. You became Orthodox Christian. That's old school.
Yeah, I joke about it and say, like, it was in the season of, like, deconstruction. I said, I feel like I deconstructed the other way, like everybody else is trying to move into, like, the next thing that makes the most sense for them and will encompass the future of what they think Christianity should be or whatever. And I kind of went 2,000 years into the past and was like, well, what did they believe at the beginning? And if there's anything true to that, I guess I can stay Christian. Otherwise, I'm out.
Well, you're not the only one. I know so many Christians that have gone that route.
Wow. Glory to God for that. I hope it's blessed for them. It's been life-changing for me. I'm still in process. I'm literally just having a conversation with my Chrissy Green earlier today, just telling her about all the different kind of painful things that I'm grieving and processing and learning and having to heal from. And it's really hard, man. But I can tell it's almost like spiritual physical therapy or something. Like, the healing from the wounds is sometimes is harder than the injury. And I'm still very much in process. So I don't want to get it all twisted and act like I got all my crap figured out or anything. But yeah, man, I'm glad to hear a lot of people are becoming Orthodox, because I do believe that it's so beautiful.
I got to say that something that really impresses me about you, Tommy, is that you don't just sing of Christ, you walk the walk. Because you and your wife founded Run Against Traffic to raise funds for survivors of human trafficking.
Yeah.
How did that come about?
Well, I mean, really, it came about because of Chrissy. In my own way, you know, I was contacted by a kid that was in trouble when I was in Sleeping Giant. And through the course of developing a relationship with this kid, we thought it was just going to be like a broken family kind of story. We were trying to help her out. And then she ended up in a situation where she was actually taken, essentially kidnapped away and traded or sold for drugs. She was found with a bunch of other girls in the back of a bar like a week later. And so what started as kind of like just a broken home kind of situation, you know, spiraled within, you know, a matter of a few months into our first real exposure of like, oh my gosh, this kid was just trafficked and then rescued by the police. But it was so outrageous that I really didn't believe it.
Because you didn't want to believe it.
Yeah, I mean, and it's also, it's insane. Is this a movie? There's no way that that's real. And so I just disqualified myself with my unbelief and my like, and Chrissy Green just took this beautiful girl kind of like into her heart and in a lot of ways became kind of like a spiritual mom to this kid. But that led us to a place where, unfortunately, this precious person was so badly abused that she got really, really sick and she passed away. Mm. And before she died, she had said, you know, to me, this is just, well, I'll keep it with me, Tommy, you have to keep sharing. There's many more like me. And that was 2016. So I was kind of just bummed and brokenhearted and shocked for about a year. And then one day on a jog, I thought, I'm going to do something to try to tell this kid's story, but it's not my story to tell. It's Chrissy Green's story to tell, because I didn't even deserve to be a part of it. I doubted the whole time. And so I just said, well, I'll do something stupid to get attention so that my beautiful wife can tell the story. So I ran physically from the top of Utah to the bottom in October of 2018. And it was just to suffer so that I could invite other people to help us in some way. And then Chrissy Green wrote this incredible book called Many More Like Me. It's just insane. It's a beautiful, beautiful, it's a very hard, very quick read. And everybody that I've talked to is like, oh my gosh, it messed me up and I couldn't put it down. And she's just insane. Like, my wife is a gangster. And so it's been really cool to watch Chrissy be able to share that book with the world. And in the meantime, we've just done different events, and businesses have partnered with us. And we did a show in California and called Rock Against Traffic. And we'll keep doing more Rock Against Traffic stuff as well. And so anything we could do to sort of like help people do what they enjoy, and then combine that with raising funds for the aftercare of human trafficking survivors in the US. Like, if you just get them out of the situation, the stats on it are it's probably 80 to 90% of the time they end up going back. Mm-hmm. And so without proper aftercare to put shattered lives back together again and be patient, they're lost. And so that's the place that we felt like we need to help, but we're not going to go kick in doors like these, you know, cool ex-military dudes that are like, oh, it's like, we just want them to have a good place to go if they can get out. My goal was to basically create like a foundation that would do for aftercare, kind of what like Live Strong does for cancer research or something. Like, we need a big foundation with a bunch of money in it. And that way it'll kick off money for all the good guys as they show up. That was kind of like our plan.
Oh, sure.
So doing that for the last few years.
Well, that Rock Against Traffic show, you did that as a fundraiser. You yeah. had some big guests on that show.
Yeah, absolutely. They were heroes, man. Some of the homies are so incredible. The people that have been a part of what Holy Name has done has been, so, I mean, again, Holy Name has been a complete and total gift. I really thought when we were done with Sleeping Giant that that was it. You know, I hit my dinger, I hung him up. I'm going to just be a dad and hang out. And that was probably the coolest it was going to be. And honestly, this has all just been an incredible gift. So to have like Brian or Jason Moody from NIV, who really helped me come to Christ years and years ago, the homie Joe Mustin from Advent, even to have Joel Munoz from Dynasty, like the Dynasty boys come out, and like to have Brian be a part, he's been like a friend of ours for a long time and just championed us in the secret when we were really going through a lot of pain. He was one of the people we could call to pray for us. And so just to have all these people show up for us, Brookie Doom, and like just all these random like guest vocalists, like they help bring healing and encouragement to my soul, let alone just being really awesome. Like, they're all really awesome. Everyone that sang with us and jumped around and had a good time. Like, me and Eric's our history through SG and through Death Star and all the, it's like just, it's all the people I'd actually want to like do stuff with. And so it's a real gift when my friends are down to contribute and be a part of this with me, for sure.
Another gift was that Holy Name recorded the Rock Against Traffic show live in Pomona.
Yeah.
You got to tell me, was that difficult to record? Because I mean, there's only so much that you can do in post-production.
Dude, it was so wild. I mean, because again, it's like when we did the live in Chicago, which to me was like, I just knew that where I was at in life, like we just are really limited in the amount of time that we can put on the road, Joe, myself, and the other dudes. And I just felt like, well, let's put together something really special so that people can hear and see us as a band. And so when we did the live in Chicago, you know, we took a full day. We played all the songs a few times. We were able to get it all like tuned up and like make sure that it sounded good, that all the stuff wasn't bleeding into different microphones. And like, you know, just we really took time to make sure that we gave the best sounding thing we could. But yeah, with Rock Against Traffic, I mean, you're just live on stage. And so we recorded our rehearsal day, the day before, just in case mics cut out, or what if someone grabs the mic for a sing along and we like miss the thing. So we tried to fill whatever gaps we could by like recording the day before and then actually recording live just to back us up. But yeah, man, I mean, it was a lot and it was very, very stressful. Like, I have to say, I had a lot of help because by the time I got on stage, I'd basically been managing a festival for 2 days and I was just shot. So I was really, really grateful for the production team. So I had a bunch of help with that day, but it's a madhouse for sure. It's like four weddings back to back or something. It was just crazy.
Now we're going to chat about what's new. You got the EP, Three Bar Cross. How did you come around to choosing that name for the title?
I had it before we did the Rock Against Traffic. If I'm honest, this was something that I was trying to get out like a year ago, but because of the busyness of starting Ritual, which was like our print company, and starting to do merch for everybody, and kind of just like struggling as a family to just try to keep, you know, stay afloat with all of our kids and make sure that everybody's okay. Like, I just kept getting buried, and it was really, really hard to stay on it creatively. And so probably 2.5 years ago, we started talking about, let's put out just a quick EP, because we had an intro song that we were doing when we do our live sets. We were talking through Stained Glass at that point. Joe was helping Trevor write that. And so I was like, I can hear it. Can I do stuff on that? And so anyway, so we had a couple songs, and I thought, well, let's just do a couple more. And let's just call it Three Bar Cross. In my mind, it was just going to be three songs. And so, you know, with an intro, that's four, but it was just like, let's just do the Three Bar Cross EP. And that way it's like just an easy way to put out something that's awesome.
Three Bar Cross comes across as being a little bit experimental. And yeah, that comes out on that opening song that you just spoke about, Christ Has Risen.
Yeah.
There's a voice saying something during the intro. Is anyone supposed to understand it? I mean, I can't.
If you speak Russian and you know the Lord's Prayer, then yeah. But it's also like augmented and fun. So yeah. My homie Roman, who is like a, he's awesome. He's prayed in Russian on Sleeping Giant's song, Finished People. So maybe Roman would get it, but I don't know a lot of dudes that speak Russian. So.
But that comes back from that Russian Orthodox church background.
Yeah. It's just one different facet of the one church, you know? Yeah. Joey put that together for an intro. I think might've just been at Furnace Fest. That might've been in Germany. We've only played a handful of times. And so one of those is where he put that together as an intro. And I thought, that's cool. So yeah. Anyways, there you go.
It is cool. What I find unusual about Holy Name, it's your message. This sounds probably strange to say, but I find the majority of the bands in the Christian metal scene, they don't have an overt faith message like Holy Name does. Do you think the other bands should?
I don't know. I think I'll keep my eyes kind of on my own plate on this one. I remember with Sleeping Giant feeling like it was a ministry as I understood it. I was there to preach the gospel as I understood it. I was there to try to lead people to Jesus. That's my goal. There was an agenda for me with Sleeping Giant. And with Holy Name, it's so weird. It's probably just whatever happens for me is probably what you're sensing. It's like, I don't know if I know a different way to do it. I share what I love. That's just what I do. And so in my mind, Holy Name is way less preachy than Sleeping Giant could ever be. But on the same token, like, I think that there's a lot of people in the world that are exhausted by the faithless reality that they have to live in. And from the very beginning, I would just say, it's like, I am not ashamed of Jesus. I'm not ashamed of him. I'm not going to be intimidated by a world that has no clue who they are in the face of the uncreated Son of God. Like, I'm sorry. It's like, he's just a better choice. So I'm like, I don't know. I think in general, like, I hope that for me, I feel like Holy Name is just more artistic. I just get to make songs. I don't have to be preaching the whole time or at all. I let the music do what it's supposed to. If people are still getting a strong message from that, great. It's not as intentional as it was with Sleeping Giant. With Sleeping Giant, I'm like, we're going to write a song about how God does this or that. And for me, I'm mostly just like in a lot of my own pain and healing. And I'm just trying to be honest about where I am. So if there's any kind of cohesive message that comes through, I hope that people will forgive me for any of that being too heavy-handed. It's literally just me trying to be in process, you know?
And I get that, because on Three Bars Cross, you challenge your own faith on the song Stained Glass when it says, I'm called into the kingdom. I would give forever just to be a son of God and praise his holy name. But now I'm on the outside, feeling like sincerity I lived was just a lie they sold, and all my love's in vain.
Yeah.
Like, that's serious stuff.
For sure, man. I guess what I would submit to you or to anyone that would ever hear any of this stuff is like, what you actually believe about God is actually profoundly important. It is the most important thing you believe, whether you even know it or not. What you believe about God is the most important thing in your life, because even if you say you don't believe in God, that affects every single decision and choice that you make consciously. And terrifyingly, probably unconsciously as well. So like, God is a big deal. To me, God is like the only deal. But for a lot of people, it's like, I think that they think it's like they can compartmentalize. And it's a very dangerous way to try to live, almost like to give yourself permission to be ignorant of divine mystery, when we love and we love beauty and we know loss and we know pain and like consciousness in a way that like no other created thing seems to. The only reason that any of it makes any sense to me at all is because of the great God, man, Jesus Christ. He's the only thing that helps any of this dumb stuff make any sense to me ever. Otherwise, I wouldn't believe. So it's like, to go from where I came from to where I am now is like, yo, the only thing that ultimately matters that's going to last is love. God is love. So like, who you love, what you love, how you love, what you think love is, how you manifest love, what you give yourself for is what you love. If you think for some reason that just because you're not in some church or whatever, that you don't have like a faith view that's coloring all of your experiences, I would just submit to you that I think you're being ignorant to how powerful God actually is in all of our experiences. Whether you believe it or not, it's happening. So I was willing to give everything I possibly could because God is so important to me. And then to go through the journey of feeling like, after years and years and years of being really about it, to feel so tricked and so manipulated and lied to, it was so heartbreaking and disillusioning. But Jesus Christ wasn't. But how people did stuff with it was the thing that was really breaking me down. Christ, I know that that's what I want to live my whole life for. But then to feel like, yeah, but the people that taught me how to do that are lying. They're so messed up. Is everything I've been living for a lie? What do I do with what was good about it? What about the dude that would assault women but taught me really cool things from the Bible? Oh my God. Like, is that how this works? Like, how are both true at the same time? Like all of that stuff. And so to really be able to say like to people in the world that have never had the opportunity to truly know Christ and say, hey, I'm one of those weirdos that was like a super fanatic about the whole thing. And I've had to make changes too, but I didn't lose my faith. I actually had to like reorient myself. And the invitation is there for other people to play on words that said stained glass. Stains. Like these dudes are stains.
I so thought that's what you were intending.
That's like the thing is like through stained glass, I can see. And so hoping that people just will hear that. It's like, I can still see, but it's stained. That's a mess. That's a mess. And I don't want to be a part of that. There you go.
I was going to insert another question there, but I think you totally answered what I wanted to hear from you.
What was your question?
What the most important thing in your life is. Is it ministry? Is it music? Your marriage to Chrissy? Or is it faith?
I think that two of those things are uniquely connected by design. The covenant that God has made with me and the covenant that I've made with my wife are the most important things in my life. That's what it is. My faith in Christ and in turn that the covenant love that I share with my wife, which is an absolute, we would say in like the Orthodox world, in terms of becoming Christ-like, there's a couple paths for people, you know, and this isn't all encompassing, whatever. They would say like, you know, if you're going to go on the journey to be an Orthodox Christian, it's like, there's kind of two paths. There's marriage or the monastery, and both are monasteries. The Orthodox Christian worldview, your marriage is designed by God to make you Christ-like. You know, it's a sacrament. It's a part of your expression of worship. and honor and obedience to God. Like, he makes it so awesome to have a partner and to have a witness and to have someone that you share life with and you make and create love with, and you create new life. And that marriage can also be a crucible that you die to self. You crucify your ego. It's a cross as well. It's the garden of God, but it's also the cross. It's designed by God to be like our little monastery.
We've got to talk about what I think may be the biggest hit from Three Bars Cross, Ritual. And on this song, the lyrics may not really be challenging, but they are worshipful.
Yeah.
You've swept through the clouds. You stand on the waves. I must find the eyes of truth before my life is swept away. That's almost like it's describing your journey.
Yeah. When I was looking at the one of six different moral failures and leaders that I knew that had been hiding all sorts of stuff, and there was all these things coming out. These were heroes of mine that, by the way, that wrote amazing books and taught crazy classes and ministered all over the world. And these were people that in many ways were just, they were showing their own weaknesses, and God have mercy on them and on me and everyone for that. But it was like watching that fall apart was really brutal. And then like watching leaders in the church that I used to be a part of try to stand up and protect a sexual predator instead of actually protecting the people that were hurting and had really been manipulated and used and abused and lied to. And I remember coming back and looking at Chrissy and just saying, where is the authority of Jesus? Because this is not authority. This is popularity and politics and money and platform. But this isn't true spiritual authority. And then I said to her, I have to find the eyes of Jesus somewhere. I can't see him here at all. And that's why that line is like, you have to find the eyes of truth, because truth isn't a concept. Truth is actually incarnate reality. It's embodied in a person. The reason that we can understand what truth is because God has made it an incarnate, embodied reality that we can actually understand. It doesn't have to be this like great philosophical mystery. Truth is a person, and that person is Christ. And so I have to find the eyes of truth before I disappear.
Well, Tommy, I've been loving the music of Holy Name, and I got to thank you for coming for this talk with The Antidote.
Well, thanks, man. I appreciate you. Thank you for the interview, Dave.